Are you coming to Europe at all?
Yeah, we're going to go to America and then to Europe.
Uh-huh.
Master plan.
Right. How long's this going to take?
About a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you prepared for all this?
Nope.
Getting prepared, but...
Did it take a lot out of you when you're touring?
Like, if I'm touring, yes. If I'm in the studio, it ends up taking a lot out of me. So. I'm looking forward to it, though. I've been in the studio for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I need to socially interact with people. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Can you tell me who the pigs are?
Depending on what song you're talking about, but it could be anywhere from... Well, for example, in March of the Pig.
Uh-huh.
I'm referring mainly to anywhere from the media to people I thought were friends that are around me, to the kind of... The issue I was addressing, I think, was the feeling we got when, in America, we attained a certain level of success. And it's surprising to see all the legions of people around that start fucking with you.
Uh-huh.
And can't wait to see you fail, hoping that you'll fuck up, ripping you off, trying to use you in some capacity.
Right.
Also, the fact that American media, in underground world, you go from being the darlings to... Oh, we accidentally start selling some records, so we have to turn our backs on it because it's not cool anymore because people know about it now.
Right. Is that what, take the skin and peel it back, doesn't it make you feel better? Is that what that line's about?
Right.
I kind of thought it had a more sinister type of meaning, but I think it's only because of the press that I've been reading about where you recorded the LP.
Well, there's that element in there.
Uh-huh.
It's a confusing issue, but thematically, which that line was referring to.
Right.
Thematically, that was the main oppressors I was attacking in there.
Right. And Piggy, the song, is that's just like I kind of took it as just a kind of mournful love song in a way.
Standard issue, mournful love song. Topic.
It's just like a term of affection in that way. How much of an effect did the Tate House have on the mood of the LP?
I would probably quite a bit. It wasn't a scary place.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was scared out of my mind the first month I lived there.
Right.
But that was my own mind making me scared.
Did you make yourself stay there?
Yeah, I'm not one to blindly believe in ghosts. That sort of thing. But I do believe there's something there, or was, in the house that was torn down in the last 2 months.
Right.
But, if anything, it's more of a sense of sadness and complacency and peacefulness in a calm, strange way.
Uh-huh.
That I didn't get the feeling of, being tormented or, aggressively interfered with.
Right.
The property is what most people don't realize, where that house is. It's up on a hill.
Uh-huh.
And it's completely isolated. And it's the most beautiful view and most serene, kind of above the smog lookout point. That I isolated myself there quite a bit, and I rarely went down to the street for anything.
Did you live there on your own?
Or
did you live there?
Oh, I had my drummer and my assistant was living in there. It was a real small guest house.
Uh-huh.
It was really small as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a small, one-floor ranch house. There are five rooms in it. Not big. I think it's misinterpreted as being this gigantic mansion, which is, or wasn't.
And I guess most of that was taken up by a recording studio as well.
Yeah, the living room was just a big, complex.
Right. Is like writing and recording music and writing lyrics a very kind of solitary process? Something that you have to kind of just dig in and do it and not have any distractions?
Right. And that was the main incentive for installing a studio into a house, was just to have an environment where I felt comfortable and it wasn't a laboratory-like hospital environment.
Right.
Recording studio. And just seeing if I would work more efficiently or less efficiently, and I learned a lot from doing that. Yeah, I learned that I don't want to do that again. And that I enjoy going away from place to go to work rather than it being where you live as well.
Right.
And I think knowing that there's a clock running and money being spent motivates me to get things done quicker.
How long were you in the house?
Just over a year.
Really?
Wow.
And that's like, was that from the beginning period of you, like, getting first ideas for the LP to finishing it?
Pretty much so, yeah. Wow. Actually, to be fair, it was more like almost a year and a half.
Wow.
But that was setting up the studio, learning how it works, and essentially writing all the songs. I'm not one to say that I am the fastest writer in the world, but one thing that may slow that down is doing everything myself.
Right.
Tends to make things take longer.
Were you teaching yourself more studio techniques that you hadn't
tried before? Yeah, I felt restricted in the sense that I could hear things the way I wanted them to sound, but I didn't have the technical knowledge to get them sounding that way.
Right.
But I have to filter that through an engineer that was a grab bag. Don't get great ones sometimes. You know, it's a frustrating experience.
After working on it for so long, how do you feel about it now?
I've tried not to listen to it for a few weeks since I completed it. And when I have, I did listen to it a couple of days ago. And my own verdict on it is I like it and I'm proud of it. You know, it's what I wanted to do. I don't know commercially what it's going to do. I don't feel personally that there's any real strong singles on the record. But I think it works well as a collection of songs as a whole rather than here's one track from the record kind of thing.
Right.
And I also think it sounds better after a few listens than the first time through. It's hard for me to be objective to that, but I've gotten that feedback from a lot of people.
Right.
But those end up being the records that I tend to like more in the long run.
Seems to me
the ones that instantly sound great.
There's,
I'm justifying. So.
There's a lot more, a lot of different textures on the LP than I've heard in your work previously. A lot of kind of acoustic kind of songs and just the way songs seem to cut up and come back again. I don't know, it just seemed, it's amazing. I really, really like the record, it's great. And what kind of musical influences do you, I mean, is there something that's changed in the music since the last project you did? In the way that you approach the music?
I set out to not redo what I've done already. And at the risk of ruining what might have been good about it in the past. But when I started writing this album, I picked up a guitar like I did with Broken and started writing songs that sounded just like it would have been on that record. And put the guitar back down and turned to the keyboard and computer and wrote the whole record on that, which was more inspiring to me. And I felt that I had a larger palette of tools to choose from. I felt a bit more confident at the guitar when I did incorporate that into the stew. And I felt less restricted tried to make a record that was broader in scope, and it went several different directions rather than here's how hard I am. I'm even harder on this song. This song, I'm even tougher. I wanted to try some different things, and then I felt a sense of freedom, like, well, I'll try to do anything. A year ago, I would have been afraid to just put a song like Closer on there, because it's obvious. And it's worst, most obvious disco drum programming, you know. But I feel that I can, felt relieved to be able to do things, that, you know. When I sit down and write stuff, various things come out, and I felt I didn't need to really center it into, well, what fits what Nine Inch Nails would do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Turn that into more what I do.
Right.
Influence-wise, I didn't listen to very much stuff that's been coming out recently, because I felt most of it, the stuff that I've heard is fairly uninteresting. And I'm not interested in guitar, bass, drum, Seattle-type sounding bands. And I found that whole wave of interest fairly, you know, fairly uninspiring to me. But I went back and discovered some records that I'd ignored growing up, a lot of David Bowie's early catalog, up until Low period. Low was a big influence on this record. And Iggy Pop, and Lou Reed, that sort of thing, which may not be that exciting to anybody else, but to me, I hadn't heard a lot of that stuff, and the depth of it stood out to me in a time now where I think a lot of music is still product-oriented, consumer-oriented, video, you know. Like nowadays, if you buy a record and it's two good songs, it's worth buying the record for. And labels realize that, and they're looking for that.
Right, they're getting more
smash that will move units and pay their salaries.
They're getting more and more desperate as time goes on.
Yeah.
When I first heard about the LP, I think I kind of read a quote, or you were quoted as saying it was a cycle of songs. Do you still consider it as a cycle?
Yeah, I mean, the way I set out to write it was something that I found I couldn't execute as I started doing it. And I kind of plotted out a theme, and almost like a storyline, an evolution. But then I wanted to plug in, you know, 10 to 14 songs that would fit along the timeline.
Right?
And that's fine when you're thinking that idea out on paper, but when it comes to fitting what randomly pops in your head as song ideas into the right mood and the right type of music and the right part of the record, at a certain stage I abandoned that. Then when I looked at songs when they were done and said, I've done enough, and stopped, and this is a record, and I'd explored, I'd kind of done what I set out to do without consciously trying to do it.
Right.
So I was shooting to make a record that worked as an album rather than just a collection of songs. I feel I succeeded more.
Right.
To my own satisfaction.
But there's no, like, there was no conscious thread. After you finished it, there was no conscious thread that went through it all.
When I finished, I mean, I still was kind of trying to adhere to that plan, but I realized at points I jumped off the path. And this song that addresses this issue, I thought would be more of a hard-edged song. It turned out to be slow.
Right.
Kind of thing. So it's not the exact thing I set out a year ago to say. I'm predicting I can write 10 songs that are all going to be like this. Or fit into this thing. I'll write a song that's hard that has this subject matter that'll fit that part. And things just mutated naturally into what they were going to turn into. The basic theme of the record still comes through to me. It's not the exact same thing that I initially thought I was going to do with it. I think it's better than if I would have tried to make myself, you know.
Right.
Whatever.
You are, sorry. Would you say your lyrics are like an exorcism of things that have gone in your life, or are you trying to just explore different extremes of emotions, trying to put yourself into a mind state so you can write something that will explore certain things?
It is an exorcism feeling. I don't know that I'm doing it to get them out of my system as much. I think I am. And I know live it turns into that. But I just came to the realization that the only thing I can really write about with any sort of knowledge or expertise is how I feel about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
That became the stage, the setting for me to start exploring. And I'll base that on my own experience and thinking about certain things. And then I get caught up in that mood of re-experiencing that, which sometimes can then, I can make more extreme things and feelings, more desperate feelings based on that.
Right. Do you find it exhilarating, kind of exploring feelings like that?
No, I find it really painful and unpleasant to do.
Uh-huh.
And ultimately rewarding when it's done, but very unpleasant to scrutinize if a certain element of your life or instance in your life is really was a low moment.
Mm-hmm.
Going back and really exploring that moment and remembering how you felt, which then makes you feel that way again.
Uh-huh.
Usually tears open some wounds, kind of, you know, it's not something I would, it's not a mental game I would play with myself. Maybe it's helping me, but I don't know.
Do you feel as if it's helping other people to exercise things, or would you not be
I think my goal as an artist would be put out something that, the nicest compliment would be, hey, I relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that they relate to what I'm saying or not, and that's why I prefer to not talk about what I mean and where it's
right.
Because it lessens the effect for the person who thought I meant something else. And then,
right.
Oh, fuck, it didn't mean that, so I feel stupid. And I've learned that just from experience of reading interviews with people. And, you know, I didn't mean that. I meant total. Feel kind of stupid for keeping the effect. And that, anyway, the point is, I think when, if I can provide a soundtrack to certain settings in life, or I won't even say me provide that, music in general to me, when I hear songs, I usually think of, they have very visual connections to me, or I vividly remember being someplace or hanging out or doing something or where I heard that song at, or sometimes I even smell. And I think anybody's music could do that to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, if someone says, hey man, I know exactly what you're talking about, or man, I totally feel the same way. Well, I don't know that you do, but I'm glad that it feels like something that you can relate to strongly.
Do you think people hold on to music far too much in the same way? They like it does become like it reopens memories of things, good things more than bad things.
I mean, I don't know. It does for me. I don't know how other people
right
feel. I don't think Nine Inch Nails appeals much to the casual music listener that buy Phil Collins records, you know,
right,
enjoy the next song. But, you know, I'm not one of those people anyway, so I don't know how to, I'm not really interested in catering to them.
Right. Your lyrics seem to refer to either yourself being hurt or you hurting someone else, in a kind of, I don't know, it seems like a reciprocal relationship almost. Is that how you see, like, human, your relationships with other people?
Yeah. And I think if you look at the bulk of the stuff I put out, I just kind of realized this from looking at stuff. To me, Pretty Hate Machine was me against everything else, trying to find sense in interpersonal relationships or life in general, religion, purpose, but still caring about, still wanting to be those things, still having myself at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Broken, I think, is a much uglier record, if you even aside from the music. Lyrically, because it's to a point of where all the same things are oppressing you, if not more, but I've lost the sense of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like myself that much. And I didn't when I wrote that record. And I didn't like anything about what I had become, you know. And on this record, there's still an element of that, I think, but it's not quite as ugly a statement. I mean, I think it's a more bleak statement. Boxing myself into a corner here. That statement refers to the relationship between Broken and Pretty Amish. And on this record, there's more of a sense of, I am also causing damage to others through my lack of being able to commit to anything, really, other than just doing this fucking project forever.
Right.
And the element of, I can take advantage of the situation if I'm unchecked.
Right. Have you got an echo on your line?
Let me just click over for 1 second.
Okay. That sounds better. Still there?
So what was I about to spout off about?
The downward spiral.
So that's about all intelligent things I can muster up to say about that.
Right. Okay. Would you ever use or if you ever used drugs to kill the pain of what you write about?
Definitely. And still do to a certain degree. Knowing that there was a song that didn't make it on the record because it wasn't finished, called The Beauty of a Drug, that will probably appear somewhat soon.
That's a great title.
If I finish it. And, it was, I think, during the course of this record, to kill the pain, I'm looking at several things to blindly try to do that through sex, through religion, through drugs, through hurting people. And to answer this question about drugs, yeah, I think drugs are, I mean, they can be misused, and there's some drugs that are just inherently evil.
Mm-hmm.
But, one of our favorite things to do in L.A. was, due to lack of anything else to do, was take mushrooms a lot.
Uh-huh.
Which we... Yes, I truly enjoy that experience.
It's not really...
It helped me a lot, actually.
Psychedelics wouldn't...
Really in a dulling way.
Right. I was going to say.
And that would be a drug that I think could work the opposite of something like heroin.
Right. Could you ever see yourself be trapped into something like heroin just to numb everything? Or are you too, like, do you have too much drive to express yourself?
Well, I do kick into self-destruction phases. But I've seen, and I experimented around with heroin this year. Our drummer died last year.
Uh-huh.
And was a junkie the whole time he was in the band. And I didn't realize to the level he was.
Right.
And I think that triggers something in me of self-destruction, of curiosity, whatever. And a good friend of mine here is a rehab person that I've put through rehab twice now. And the whole, I wouldn't see myself on that drug because it's just not, it's too shitty.
Mm-hmm.
My thing, it's not, I have no desire to be part of that. And I don't think I could let myself do that anyway. There's still a part of me that likes a little bit of me, enough to not let me flounder.
Right.
That bad.
Are you, there's something that I kind of think about, is that when people are like tearing, all torn up inside, or you know, like, using something like heroin to kill the pain, and they can still present a normal face to the world and to everyone else, and act normal. Do you kind of see that around you? Do you do that at all?
I think not through drug use, but just through what's in my head. A lot of times I think I have to be insane to think like this. I'm not normal. I'm out of balance.
Right.
But I don't walk around every day conveying that attitude.
Right.
I was being true to myself and ignored all social standards. I could, you know, I don't know.
Can I change tack a little?
Sure.
Have you ever messed around with subliminals in your sound?
Yeah.
It seems to me it's kind of like the sound that you produce, the electronic sound, is kind of really deep with kind of electronic noise. I just kind of wondered, sorry, I'll let you continue.
No, we haven't done anything like, you know, hidden speaking behind stuff where you don't hear it, a little message tape type stuff.
Right.
But I've experimented on this record quite a bit with the idea of just laying things into the mix, like we've a lot of found samples, a lot of stuff we've taken off movies, not of dialogue, which is like cliched, but of just sounds. Like my assistant's job was to listen to a bunch of movies without watching them, and just if you hear something cool, throw it on tape.
That's a good idea.
And if you watch it, you can't do it.
Right.
Because you either start paying attention to the movie, or you hear a sound that you know is, you know, a boat going through the water. But if you don't know that's what it is, then you hear it. Like, Flood and I did a thing, a little experiment. He goes, check out the sound. What do you think this is? And it sounded like someone tapping on a pie pan. Really not a very good sound.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that is 300 African children's hands beating on the skin of a dead elephant. Thing, you know? And then you hear it again, it's like, wow, that's a great sound. You know, but it's the same sound I just said sounded shitty a second ago.
Right.
That same principle works in terms of finding sounds within movies and stuff.
Right.
So, experiment with getting a song up, and if the mood I was wanting was one of tension and just something unpleasant, like in the song The Becoming, I wanted that to sound like a machine that keeps building and just a feeling of something's going to break or something. You want it to stop. And we just laid in some samples of women screaming and from some unknown source. It could have been some tribal thing that we found or something off a movie. Three or four different layers of that, and just loud enough that you tune it out after a while because you're listening to the other things that are more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it still adds this sense of, what the fuck is making this so, founding.
Right.
And there's lots of things like that, of just loops of random noise, things to add a sense of, to put it into different space. Like, I stumbled on that by, one time I was so bored, I was mixing a song early on, Pretty Hate Machine days, and I had the TV on just to kind of keep my focus on. The volume was up, and I was still working on this track, and laid a mix down, and went in the other room, and listened to it to see what it sounded like, and it sounded terrible, and I realized because I didn't hear the TV going. And that TV added a sense of casualness to it.
Uh-huh.
The whole song into a different space.
That
didn't sound right without some extraneous thing going on that kind of draws your attention away a little bit, but not. So.
That happened a lot, like adding random things that just happen, pop up, and